extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, somewhere in Columbus. We don't know where, we can't see his face, boy we wish we did, David Goss, fresh off that Campeones Cup. How's the hangover, Dave? How you feeling, man?
Well, there's nothing like two champions in one building. Like that is a true feeling of the game. And this is some crazy technology where it's like we're all talking, but we're not on video. There should be a name for a medium where it's like you can release voice-only content and people can listen to it, but like longer form, like 40,
yeah, it's like Twitter Spaces.
Minutes, an hour. Twitter Spaces, but like right. Permanent, like one that you could download, like almost like
God,
casting
what would
it
be?
To them, but potting it as well.
That's weird. That's strange. Yeah. We don't know anything about that. We don't do that. Look, a lot to talk about on this show, and I'm doing it. I don't know where you are, Charlie. Dave, I know where you are, too. You're probably in my boat. Doing it on, like, 6 hours of sleep. History made Wednesday night in Major League Soccer. 14 games. Never been done before. Not physically possible. Previous. We now have 27 teams, and you'd think, that's not going to work out. Odd number. Well, that's what Campeones Cup is for. 14 games on a Wednesday night. It is a lot. We're going to try to get through it all. Of course, we're talking Columbus Crew and their moment in the sun. Can they stay there, or will they go back to the shadows as the playoff race really, really winds down? TBD on that one. But 2-0 against Cruz Azul at Lower.com Field. Nothing to be ashamed of. You saw the celebrations. It clearly meant something to the Crew. Dave was there. We'll talk to him about that as well. Go through the bubble. The Revs chase for history rolls on. They win again, so they are on pace to do something very, very special. We also have a coaching change, our 7th of the year, not yet confirmed by the Fire, but Taylor Twellman reported last night, and The Athletic is reporting now, so I'm taking it as gospel. Rafael Wicky out after about 21 months in charge of the Chicago Fire.
After probably his best win of his tenure.
Yeah, wins 2-0 against NYCFC, and they're like, and pat you on the butt, and we'll see you next time, Raf. Like, go out on a high, man. Go out on a high. And, of course, Greg Berhalter announces U.S. Roster for the World Cup qualifiers, which are coming up very, very quickly. No Reyna or Pulisic, but a lot to talk about there as well. They may be in camp later. TBD on that one. Then we'll hit the mail. Let's just get started, and let's start with Campeones Cup, because you were there, Dave, and we were doing the live show last night, and just having the images and seeing you there filled me up. It feels, I think that's our first on-location hit for MLS soccer in probably like, what, it was probably March 2019. It's been a long time. What did it feel like to be on the field as the trophy was lifted and to avert disappointment for MLS? Like, League's Cup? What's League's Cup? We forgot about League's Cup. That was a week ago. It's Campeones Cup time, and that's the cup that matters, right?
Yeah, obviously. It's the one that everyone wants.
Exactly.
So it's like 1A to 1 right
well,
now
see,
on the year.
When Atlanta wins something?
Challenge and All-Star.
Oh, true.
So it's like
challenge.
2A to 2 right now on the scoreboard.
It's hard to rank them, really. Impossible.
Win in penalty kicks, basically, or win from the midfield line on the crossbar challenge. It was awesome. It's been awesome. It's been a great week. It's been awesome to come back into this market. As you said, we haven't really traveled and seen people. So one of the things for all of us that we do is we have a community in the American-Canadian soccer sphere, and to get to see people that I've known for years and that I like and get to talk the game with them and about what they're doing here and all that stuff. And I took a tour of the facilities, and you know, we say this every time maybe, but training center is unbelievable. What they've built is unbelievable. The way they're going to use old classic Crew Stadium to still be a part of this club is pretty impressive and unprecedented. And then Lower.com Field is everything you've heard. And what I love about it is maybe it doesn't have the swimming pool on the sunset porch that we talk about for 6 months before it opens, but everything felt like it was built for every fan, and the stadium's super vertical and everything's right on top of the field. So it feels like every seat's a good seat, and it creates an atmosphere. It was not full yesterday. And it felt real, and it felt like intense, and it was bumping, and it felt like a championship game. And I think you could see that in the way both teams played.
Gus, and let's get to the performance. This is what I want to talk about, and I know you're itching to talk about. So the Columbus Crew, they've struggled this year, especially considering the expectations after winning MLS Cup last season, and you basically keep the same team together. If not, you add some firepower. Yes, Molino's been injured. Bradley Wright Phillips is not the Bradley Wright Phillips that they thought they were getting so far.
Everybody's been injured, right? Charlie. Like, yeah. They lost their starting midfield, half of it, off the jump before they even played MLS games.
However, they seem like they're starting to get back to some sort of form. Do you think that this win, considering it was straight grinded out, not getting too many opportunities, not having the ball, having to come together, defend as a group to win 2-0, do you think this is the win that gets them back into a rhythm and a form to get into the playoffs?
I think it can, and for a few reasons. One, they're getting healthier, and so they're getting talent back. I also think, I also think there's a feeling in the group that, like, of relief, seeing players come back, feeling like reinforcements are on the way, feeling like maybe the curse has been lifted or whatever they're going through. The other is that Caleb Porter chose to go with a 3-4-3 setup yesterday, and that was something they've never played, and they've worked on it for a week, and I think Vito Wormgoor was actually supposed to be a key part of it, and he ends up being absent, and they still roll it out there and get a 2-0 win against the best team in Mexico last year and one of the deepest teams. And they looked really solid defensively. Now, they did sit behind the ball more than we see the Crew play in MLS, but their lines were really clean. I think Josh Williams coming back, and he's started now, I think, 3 of the last 5, and they've only lost 1 since he's been in the starting lineup. He's key for them, and we saw it in the cup run last year as a communicator, as a leader along the back line, making Mensah's job not easier, but putting him more in the position that makes him at his best. You bring in a fullback or a wing back in Marrera, and he's starting to get fit, and you can start to spell Harrison Awful a little bit or not play your fifth center back or right back or whatever it is. So you start to see him get a little bit more comfortable. And then they got Zardes back last week. He misses today, but the feeling around the club was that he'll be available against Philly and he'll be good for World Cup qualifying. And that's just a huge bonus for them. So I do think that this is a moment that they can feel like they're rounding a corner. And the win yesterday only solidified that. And the other thing that happened last night, which I think is really interesting, and you see the way Zelarayán played in that game and everything that happened, I think there was an element for the Crew of, like, they wanted to win that so they could celebrate with their fans the way they couldn't after MLS Cup. So I think there was an emotional thing that happened last night that could change the fortunes going forward as well.
It did feel on both sides, to be honest, because Cruz Azul went out and played, I mean, at worst, probably 8 out of 11 starters. At best, you could argue, because there are some sort of, like, if or maybe both these guys are sort of up for it, like 10 or 11 starters. They wanted it. They put resources into it, and the intensity was there. And, you know, we talk about these games, like, is Leagues Cup going to be something? I believe it is, but I also know that it has to be reflected in the product. Like, you can't just sit on this podcast and be like, oh, Leagues Cup is awesome, and then have players and coaches and organizations punt on it and have that be true. It's just not going to work, and I'm not naive in that sense. In Campeones Cup, I think the other editions have been really good. I was there for the first one, history made, in Toronto. And it had elements of that, and Tigres were just the better team. Certainly it had elements for Atlanta last year against Club America. And this game, to me, had an intensity that, one, made it feel like a final on the field, had an intensity in the post game that made it feel like both teams, certainly the Crew, really cared. And it was refreshing to me. Like, this is what's going to drive us forward. I think as a league, certainly in our ability to compete with Liga MX and beyond, I think just in getting people interested in the games that are happening, like, you might listen to the show and be like, God, lay off. Like, shut up about Leagues Cup. Shut up about Campeones Cup. Just stop with the hype game. And I'm not going to. I refuse to, because what my long goal here is, one, I truly do enjoy it and love it. I was sitting down here just in my soccer cave of a basement, just enjoying it. But I want more people to do that. I want more people to see what I see. I want to, as you said, Dave, when you go to, you know, cities and you have your little, you have your little like group of people. I want that to be a big group of people. I want us all to be in this massive sort of ecosystem of friends and fans and people who love and support and help grow this game. And more occasions like this are only going to help with that.
So I agree with you, Weeby, and I think that's one of the things that I experienced this week is, so one big thing is every Liga MX team, pretty much, inside the U.S., it's like traveling with the 96 Bulls or the Beatles. Like, it is like, it's people finding ways into the hotel everywhere. You know, it's Cruz Azul gear in every restaurant in the area you're in because they're just waiting, hoping that someone comes by and Pablo Aguilar comes by drinking mate and then everyone gets an autograph and stuff. There's so much mate in this hotel right now. It's absurd. So it's all of that. And I think it's a moment for a community to come together and something to be excited about and a way to feel seen and represented. And then also like a rallying moment. You know, it's a moment for not just Mexicans or not just Cruz Azul fans in this area, but I think a lot of Latinos to feel like, oh, this is a thing that we can all get together for and go out and tailgate and go to this game and all that. And I said it on the Twitter space yesterday. I saw a ton of Chicago City flags on a supporter section of Cruz Azul fans. So people traveled from all over the region to come to this game.
Right.
And all of that has a ton of value. And then the interaction between Crew fans and Cruz Azul fans. I saw a bunch of people after the game who were split groups. Crew jerseys and Cruz Azul jerseys going to the bar afterwards. Right? So it's a chance for all of that interaction to happen, which I agree with. Charlie, the other thing I want to say on the pushing to the playoffs is multiple players from the Crew on the field after the game off camera said to me, this win feels not like it doesn't matter, but like they're playing with house money now. Like it takes a little bit of pressure off. They want a trophy this year, and they want to make the playoffs. The entire focus is to make the playoffs. But I'm sure you've been in that situation, and we've seen it. Obviously, schedules have changed where teams win an Open Cup, teams win an FA Cup, teams win a Pokal, whatever, I don't even know the pronunciation, before the league ends. And it's like they can play a different way a little bit because they already have a trophy in the back pocket.
Yeah, you're right. I think in that sense, not only for the players, but Caleb Porter.
Oh yeah,
that's the big one.
He was getting the big hugs, the big smiles yes. from the ownership box. They were jacked up about this. It's not like they're going to push him out after MLS Cup winning season. But yeah, you need. I mean, political capital matters.
It's
a big injection of that.
I can tell you one thing: as a player, when you see stress put on the coach,
right.
Right.
He changes.
He changes the way his tone, the way he talks, the way he dresses people and his movements. Sometimes, you know, in the morning, I've been around coaches and there's no good morning. They just get their food and they leave. And you're like, OK, strange. Versus you win 3-0 on the weekend. And he's like, hey, good morning. Good. You know, there's just a certain kind of feeling within the locker room that's negative. As opposed to, we got that trophy, the owners are happy, my bosses are happy, I don't have that on my back, on my conscience, I don't think about it every day, and if we don't get in the playoffs, it's not the end of the world. We had some injuries, we still came away with a massive trophy for us. I don't think there's so much pressure on Caleb Porter knowing that he brought a trophy home.
Yeah. No, let's just be real. No one's getting let go because of what happens the rest of the year.
No.
And I think that was true anyway.
Yeah.
But now you can guarantee it. And that, to Charlie's point, allows that. And Weeby, to what you said of the excitement there, it felt like a big deal yesterday. It felt like a true championship. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of this tough year, I'm standing on the field and I'm watching 15,000 people celebrate and the confetti go up. And I think for everyone here, it was like, well, we built this, right? We built this building. We built
Absolutely.
This setup. We built this club. We won a championship last year. And all of what they've been doing is about reconnecting with this market. And not just reconnecting back to what Columbus Crew were, but changing it and making it different and new. And that's where last night was a big deal. I talked to, I think, Dante Washington, and he said, we know once we get people in this building, they're coming back. We just need to get them here. And winning a trophy in a moment like this, where the Columbus Blue Jackets aren't playing yet, you know, and Ohio State doesn't have a game today. And it's like, the cover story everywhere here is going to be that Columbus Crew won a title, gets people back into this building. So I think it was a big moment, as you both touched on, and I think it does help the mood and the potential for this club.
Absolutely it does, because, I mean, look, the last three in MLS are win, draw, win. That draw was against the Revs. They are, I think, 4 points out of the playoffs in the Eastern Conference right now. No, five. But Orlando sort of seem like they're fading. I mean, the window is closing a little bit on the Crew. They have a massive game, I believe, against Philly this weekend. But Tim Bezpachinko said this to you on the field, Dave, and I thought it was really spot on, which is, like, we're making memories in this building, and that's what we need to do. I mean, how many memories were just sort of baked into Crew Stadium? You know, decades worth of Crew memories, of U.S. soccer memories, of just families and people growing up with the game in that building. And that's going to have to happen for Lower.com Field. It's just got a few more bells and whistles. As much as I love old Crew Stadium, man, it's the best. But you
I
know,
do,
those,
I do
those,
too.
Those hard metal bleachers, in, you know, on a MLS Cup night or like a U.S. men's national team qualifier when it's pretty chilly could be tough. You're just going to make those memories in better surrounds. Let's talk a little bit about the game itself here, because we're sort of focusing on the big picture topics. This did feel like more urgency from the Crew. Like, it didn't feel like the same, I don't know, didn't seem like the same team in a lot of ways, and like their desire and hunger. That doesn't mean that they were just like, oh, we're willy-nilly going forward 24-7, but they seemed to understand the game plan, and they executed it, no doubt. But, man, if Darlington Nagbe plays like that,
yeah,
my God. I'm not saying he should go to Liga MX, but I would love to see him in a no midfield, up and down game in Liga MX, because he was just eliminating Cruz Azul players like it was the easiest thing in the world. Like, just give me the ball, I'm gonna pass it off, I'm gonna move a little bit and show. They're gonna close, and I'm going to just walk away. Perfect touch, perfect vision, more speed, better burst. I mean, he was dominant at times in this game. There were a few times he didn't pick the right ball. Yeah, I got to say, Dabgod had a rough one. He was where Crew attacks went to just die.
Which is normally the game he scores in. That's normally how that ends. The game where he makes you want to pull your hair out, or for you, for me, just rub my hand over my head.
You got a nice clean shave going, too, by the way. People can't see it on YouTube, but they might have seen it on the postgame show. You really bicked that thing well. All electric
okay. Over here. Yep. Got to keep with the high technology. But I agree with you. So I think part of that was Zelarayan off to the left. One, he drew defensive attention there. And two, it left that space open for Nagbe to take rather than advance the ball to Zelarayan and then be supportive. And I think that's an interesting thing to look at going forward, especially if you're playing Pedro Santos or Valenzuela at left wing back, because they'll give you the width because you know Zelarayan's going to come inside. You know he's going to want to try and take more of the game. But if you can get legitimate width on the right side to keep the field balanced and you have a good left wing back in either Santos or Valenzuela that can give you that. This new setup, because when they put it out, I was like, no way. There's Zelarayan's not really going to play over there. And he did. And I thought that's what helped allow us see the best of Darlington Nagbe.
Yeah, but I don't think this is sustainable. I don't think they can play with this same lineup against away at Philly. Maybe at home against Inter Miami, you can get away with it. At Nashville. Red Bulls at home and Orlando City at home, and then at DC.
You're talking about the personnel or the formation?
I'm talking about both, because
I knew you were about to say that.
You can't have the personnel that you have and play this formation and expect results, because this, for me, is largely a defensive formation. They knew Cruz Azul was going to have possession. They knew Cruz Azul was going to dictate the tempo, and they had to be, you know, one of those teams that withstands pressure, contains.
And there's some good fortune within that of this game plan working. An own goal sort of sets you up to be like, oh, perfect.
Right. Yeah, they have to be more aggressive. Right.
And Cruz Azul just were whipping in balls. They were whipping in balls. They were not, I mean, Doyle made this point on the postgame show, and I agree with him. They weren't very patient in trying to break this down. Like, just hold on to the ball. Move them around a little bit, man. You're going to have the ball. You don't got to put it in the mixer. Like, it's not like you're never going to get it back.
Yeah,
just hold on.
They almost never broke Columbus's shape. They never played in between their lines. Everything that was quote-unquote dangerous was pretty much right and left center back playing a vertical ball diagonal to the opposite wing back or the opposite winger trying to get behind Keita or Mensah. That was literally it for the first 65 minutes. then Rodriguez comes in, then the game starts to get a little bit more chaotic, and you had a couple half chances here and there where Columbus is scrambling defensively, but you're always going to have that over the course of a game against a team of that quality. But yeah, Cruz Azul didn't seem comfortable. Now, in saying that, but you asked me, well, can they make the playoffs? I think, one, they won a trophy, so now the pressure's off for them to be like, well, we have to play a certain style. If this works, why can't they do it against Philly? Why can't they do it against Inter Miami?
You think that the way they played, the style they played, is sustainable to get results in this league for the rest of the season with this same line?
I actually think at Philly, not the worst idea. I don't know that Philly, with the ball, with a packed-in defense, are going to be particularly successful breaking down the Crew. Like, I think they would be more comfortable in sort of like wham-bam transition moments. I know they're not as much of that team as they were last year, but I still don't look at Philly and think, oh, wow, yeah, you know, they're going to go break down a block. They're going to go carve this thing up. They got that sort of like movement, those sort of players in attacking positions. I don't know about that. Inter Miami, I don't know. Look, man, how deep of a game plan do you need
yeah,
right
for
now?
For sure. Yeah.
That's why I said Inter Miami, take that out of the equation.
In some senses, to me, just belief and that intensity that they played with and Darlington Nagbe at that level, that could do it. Let's say they win a couple games in a row. Let's say the results go their way. They could pull themselves back up by their bootstraps. I don't personally think they are going to make the playoffs. That's just my opinion. I just think that the hole that they put themselves in is far too deep. But they also didn't go out in the offseason like many other teams and make a bunch of big signings. Yeah, they went and got Molino. Yeah, they got BWP. They stayed within the league. But I think had it been a different world, maybe they go make more, not ambitious, but different style of signings and maybe more of them. Because it, you know, while we were super excited about the way that they rebuilt after MLS Cup, they have, I mean, Dave, you said before, I mean, they have some resources to go make some changes. This is not like they're going to go into 2022 with this being their team.
Yeah. No, they do. And Matad was the one that they brought from outside the league.
And he hasn't really hit. And, not yet, at least.
And I don't think that was the point, right? The point with the 2022s was, well, now we don't rely on this guy, right? We don't have to bring Barco in and say, oh, well, he's for now and the future. They can bring a guy in for just the future. I don't want to say the problem is because they won MLS Cup last year, is they have two of the lower NDPs in MLS in Nagbe and Zardes, who can both be transferred off that. And then you could bring in more players at a higher level. When you look at Seattle, they've got Sao Paulo and Rui Diaz and Nico Lodero. So there is room for Columbus to work. Now, in fairness, if Arthur had played any of this year and Kevin Molino had been remotely healthy, this conversation would probably be different. So I don't think the moves they made were wrong. It just gives you even less, you know, assurance that your team's going to play at a level. But I do think that I do think the Crew are going to push themselves even harder this offseason. And last year was not the peak of what they were building. And while this year has been a letdown, remember that Tim Bezbachenko was in Toronto. They had the up, they had the down. He left. Corey Ray, who's his assistant GM, was still there. And they came back and made it to MLS Cup again, you know, 2 years later after missing the playoffs the year after. So I think it's a group that understands with the salary cap, it's an up and down experience, but they have a ton of resources to continue to push this group.
All right, congratulations to the Columbus Crew, campeones of Campeones Cup. Not the campeone campeones, but you know, it's all, you'll figure it out. Last question here, it's the important one, the one we haven't answered. Does Lucas Del Arayan go to the tattoo parlor today? Does he get a companion tat to the MLS Cup tat? And would you tattoo the Campeones Cup on your body, Charlie? I actually love this trophy, sort of in its absurdity. It's a big number one. It's amazing. Now, just like I love the League's Cup because it's just like, it looks like a, you know, it looks like a yo-yo. They're both beautiful in their absurdity.
I never want to disrespect you on this show, but I would tell you, are you out of your mind? One, I don't have tattoos, so I wouldn't get it in the first place, but
yeah,
I'm not putting Campeones Cup on my body.
What about just a big number one? What about like a...
nope.
You know, just a big number one.
Nope.
Just to show the Cruz Azul fan in your life. Just be like, oh, where did this come from?
That's I know you're hyped, but no. Just no. Not going to happen.
Well, that answers that. We have so much more to talk about.
One, the Man of the Match trophy is pretty much just a mini Campeones Cup. It's like tiny, And I think it's exactly the trophy, just tiny. And two, Ander says he's getting the Campione's Cup trophy on his body tattoo next week.
Next Friday. Nice.
Yeah.
So it's like the Pepe hype train. It's the Campione's Cup.
Listen,
like,
Anders has been a Seattle Sounders fan since day one. And when that club decided to move to MLS, it was with the sole purpose of eventually winning a trophy that didn't exist at the time. And they said, one day, there'll be this trophy called Campione's Cup, and that's why we're moving. And I'm waiting for that moment.
If we're being honest, that is the that's the hole in the Sounders trophy case.
That's why they need Darlington
Nagby. It's that and CCL, and it's Leagues Cup, certainly. Those are big holes in the Sounders trophy case. All right, let's keep it going. There's so much to talk about from this midweek action. Again, 14 games. I had three boxes going in my phone, and I still felt completely adrift, like I had no idea what was going on. So we're going to do our best here to run you through the entirety of the midweek, and also, I mean, I don't know if we're going to be able to look ahead to the weekend, but at least give you some flags as to what to watch over the weekend as well, because another full slate there. How about this? Charlie, let's start with Atlanta.
Let's start with Atlanta.
Some doubts after their most recent performance. It was like, boy, you guys have been stacking wins, but then the Union handled business. And look, Inter-Miami is no juggernaut. We're not here to tell you that they are. But 3 points is 3 points for a team trying to stay above the playoff line. And a 1-0 win with Joseph Martinez scoring from the spot. His 100th goal in MLS in all competitions. He is the fastest to 100. 125 games it took him. That is ridiculous. The second fastest to 100 in all competitions was who, guys? Can you guess? Do you know? Have you read it? Did you see it on Twitter?
I have not seen it.
Who would you guess? Charlie, did you see it?
I did not see it.
Oh, perfect. 100 in all comps?
Second fastest, because obviously Joseph's number one now.
Yeah.
But the second fastest, I would say.
I would say BWP if I had to guess.
Nope, you guessed
Thierry
wrong.
Thierry Henry?
You also guessed wrong. I don't even think Thierry
Henry. He doesn't have 100.
Yeah, he doesn't have 100. He has
I'm just trying to guess
the
people.
Robbie Keane.
Ah, there you are.
Nice.
See, I got it.
Your second guess. Robbie Keane, it took him 156 games.
Okay.
And remember Robbie Keane's entrance into the league. It was like, oh my God, he's a magician. Well, Joseph Martinez scowled, swaggered, you know, celebrated his way to 100 and 125 games. Put that in perspective, Charlie. Help us understand how difficult that is, what that means, and what this goal meant to Atlanta.
It's the hardest thing to do in the game, is score goals. That's why they get paid the most money. Literally, it's the hardest thing to do. What Joseph Martinez has done since he's come to Major League Soccer is nothing short of incredible. It's astonishing. And to think he was a winger before he came to Major League Soccer, in similar fashion, and I'm not comparing the two players at all in any way, but Thierry Henry was a winger before he made his way to Arsenal. I think what you've seen from Joseph Martinez is really hard to duplicate because he's so consistent. He's always toeing the line, and he's just one of the most effective finishers I've ever seen. And I've loved Robbie Keane's movement. I'm a huge fan of Robbie Keane, just getting to see him. It wasn't till I actually saw him on the field that I thought, whoa, his work rate, his determination. And that's what you get with Joseph Martinez, just in a different way. It's always towards goal. There's
a little
always
more direct.
His movement is always with the mindset of, I got to score a goal here. I have to get on the end of this cross or this ball or make the right movement to open up space for myself. It's incredible.
And the determination, too. I mean, they joked about it last night, and I was like, how are you? Atlanta United tweeted, build, period, the, period, statue, period. And I'm like, Atlanta, you the ones that will build the statue.
Mm-hmm.
Should they build a statue? Does this need to get built? I personally believe they should. I've been to Mercedes-Benz many times. They have the real estate to build a statue and not worry about it being like, oh, we have too many statues.
No,
like,
build it.
Put it up.
Build it.
Put it up. But, what pose would it be?
Oh, you know, it's the kneeling.
It's the kneeling?
It's the kneel. It's the, I'm King Joseph.
You don't think it's the, like, arms spread wide looking up at the supporter section?
No, it's, you know, it's the kneel.
I do know.
But the reason they're going to build it is because of how long he'll be there, right? Like, while this is great, if he were to leave tomorrow, I don't know.
But you know he's not. That's why you build it, right? Because he, like, that's almost the most impressive thing about what he's done in Atlanta is that he has sort of made himself one with the club and the supporters. Yeah. Like that's not easy to do. You can say like, oh yeah, you just go and you know, you show the fans that you care and you say the right things and you perform. Like, yeah, I mean, but how many people actually do that?
Yeah, not agree. Many. And that's why Landon Donovan gets a statue. It'd be not just because he was probably he probably saved the league and was a great player, but because of his longevity and what he did for that club. And so that's where with Joseph, it's like, well, no, I'm not going to build it in 2021. But if, as we hope and expect, he stays for 3-4 more years and they win more trophies with a new group that he's still a part of and continues to be the face of a franchise that, let's take it off the field, right? Is more successful than any of us anticipated in terms of selling tickets and market relevancy and all that stuff. And his both personality, his talent, his style, as well as him staying there has allowed that to happen. Because if he had left with Almiron and then they have the down years with Frank DeBoer, there's no face of the club. There's nothing to build everything around.
Yeah, what are you hanging it all on?
To continue to sell, yeah. And he was that.
Anders is being just completely... Yeah. How can I mute the chat? Can I delete the chat? I mean, we talked about putting this on top of the YouTube for a long time. Get me out of here. The Sounders, the Rave Green glasses here are just unbelievable. He's trying to build a statue for Freddie Montero in the chat right now. Did I put that in his mouth? Did he say that? No, he didn't. But it feels like that. All right, how about this?
And just to counter that, would you put a Freddie Montero statue there ahead of Ladero or what?
He didn't.
Will be Montero left.
Yeah.
No, because if Freddie hadn't gone
that's a good point,
Portugal,
actually. If Montero had stayed there the whole time,
you'd build that statue. Guy, then you probably would, because he probably would have continued to be successful. You'd hope.
Get him.
Yeah, Anders.
But Freddie got a coffee shop instead, so he's good.
Exactly. He got the square footage.
Yep, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, man. He got the doors. The doors are open.
Choose your fighter.
Exactly. Montreal hosting New England. New England did what New England does. They won 4-1. Now, they also gave up a good number of chances. Charlie, you said you're tired of talking about New England because
we don't need to talk about New England anymore.
Okay.
They are who we thought they were.
Exactly. Let me just tell you again. I've been updating people on the chase for history. So you win again now in the last five, 4 wins and a draw. 65 points or 7 back of where LAFC set it. They have 5 games left, still 80 points max. They need 8 out of 15 to get by. So if they win 3 games, they are the new record holders. If they win 2 and draw 2, they're the new record holders. They have 2.24 points per game. So they're on track for 76.2 points. That would be breaking the record by more than 4, which is pretty incredible. That would just kind of be blowing it out of the water. Remaining schedule, home against the Fire, who just, quote-unquote, parted ways with Rafael Wicki. We all know what that means. At DC, at Orlando, Colorado, Miami. Both those last two at home. So you have two sort of... are they softballs? Yes, in Miami and Chicago to bookend. 3 pretty difficult games. At DC, you're now 3rd in the East. At Orlando, who are holding on but had a little bit of life against Nashville. And then Colorado, who we'll talk about in a second, but should be top of the Western Conference. Dave... We have Nikolai in Nashville saying this. Can Carlos Hill really be MVP if New England only lost once while he was out with injury? He seems to be a really good piece on a really good team, but they wouldn't fall off without him. Oh, my God. People are insane. Yeah. You're not watching it, Nikolai. You're not. You haven't seen it.
So here's the problem with what's happening this year is that the Revs are so far above everyone else that they win with Carlos Hill and without him. Because they're just winning all the time. So there is a little bit of an argument there of like pure most valuable to their team. Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to think of someone. Maybe.
I don't know. Look, but we don't know. No, Daniel Shaw, we didn't get hurt. So we don't have an opportunity to measure it like that.
The old Peyton Manning argument, the year he was hurt and they went 1-16, right? Or 1-15, whatever however many games he played. And it's like, well, Peyton Manning's the most valuable player in the league because when he's out, his team's terrible. That's like the Carlos Vela argument, all that. That could be an argument you could make, and it would be a dumb one. Carlos Hill set the tone for this team.
Exactly.
He's the best chance creator in this league. He's got the stats. He's got the numbers. He's got the performances. The Revs are just so much better than everyone else that the Revs with him and the Revs without him are probably favorites every time they step on the field right now. in Major League Soccer, and that's ridiculous. That's why I said a few weeks ago, I don't think they'll break this record because I don't think Bruce will care. And then he's rolled out backup lineups, and they've won every single time with those teams. So that's why they're probably going to end up breaking this record now, it looks like. And I don't even understand how high they're going
to
get.
And just to answer that ridiculous question, you have Matt Turner as well. So you can lose Carlos Hill, and games are still going to be close because you have the best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer.
Well, he's saying that's the argument against Carlos Hill's MVP performance. Because there's other MVPs on that roster, he then isn't the league MVP. That's his argument. And this guy's from Nashville, right? So he's saying Hany Mukhtar
is
more valuable to Nashville, which he's not saying, but we're assuming, than Carlos Hill is to the Revs, which isn't wrong, except part of the MVP conversation is who has had the best season as well.
Typically on the best team.
Right. Carlos Hill has had the best season in Major League Soccer. He is the best player in the league right now. And his team is very good, and when he is on the field, that team wins.
Just like Carlos Hill shouldn't get demerits for the teammates around him being so good that it elevates the entire team, and oh, by the way, he's the one that sets that tone. He's having a historic, not just historic, best ever chance creation season. So that's where guys like, you know, how does Tejan get super comfortable and productive? Oh, well, Carlos Hill and others, but Carlos Hill primarily, puts him in positions to build that confidence and build the sort of productive season that he's had. How does Gustavo Bowe and Adam Buxa score this many goals? Well, there's a lot of great balls coming in from the fullbacks. You say, well, go back and watch. How does that fullback get into that position? How does New England build and hold possession and manipulate defenses? It's Carlos Hill. That's how.
And you also have to throw in Matt Polster this year.
You do. But let me just make this point, which is you can't give Carlos Hill demerits for having good teammates.
Right.
And then, like, pump up Hany Mukhtar because he has to do so much for Nashville. Like, it doesn't go both ways. Like, unfortunately, it's a 16-point gap, folks. Like, sorry, Hany Mukhtar's not going to win MVP. It is not going to happen. There is not a chance in hell that Hany Mukhtar wins MVP in 2021.
Not a chance.
Just zero.
But that is not disrespect to Hany at all.
He's having an amazing season.
I want to say it.
All the plaudits, but he's not going to get that plaudit.
Yeah, I will say it right now. Nashville and Hany Mukhtar have been sensational this year from what I was expecting from them, to be honest. It's been a revelation because, yes, Nashville were good last year, but what they've been able to build off of, I think, is really incredible. Hany Mukhtar has elevated his game. I think they're good in transition. CJ Sapong looks revitalized. You know, no one ever thought he'd be the guy who's going to be responsible for scoring goals, hold up play. He's doing that. So whoever's been plugged in has really contributed. And then Dax McCarty still doing Dax McCarty things, being able to break up plays, organize the team. And then you can't forget about Walker Zimmerman. He might be obviously just as important as Hany Mukhtar when you talk about removing a player.
And there's so many names that you can go through that on this team. But I just want one stat here for you. And when you talk about value, this is the ultimate in value in this game. It is points. It is wins. That's where they come from. New England have 20 wins this season. Nashville have 11. Like, the level of dominance, the value that Carlos Hill has ushered in for that club as their best player, tone setter, chance creator, is worth more in what we all measure success on than Hany Mukhtar's has. And that's not a knock on Hany, and it's just the way it is. Now, Nashville had an opportunity to get three on Wednesday. They didn't get it. Orlando, at the death, found a way. 2-2 draw. Disappointing for Nashville. Big time for Orlando. They needed it. That was about to be five straight losses for the Lions. And we've sort of talked in circles on this show about, oh, you know, they're getting rested. Nani's coming back. Like, we still believe in this team, yada, yada. But it was starting to feel a little bit like we still believe in LAFC. Not quite the same depths, but Orlando has just been free-falling down the table. They're now in seventh. They're only 2 points ahead of Montreal. So, look, that was a big moment. And while Hany had a great game, Nashville are going to have to rue that one because they now have 13 draws on the season. They've been much better. I would not say that they have been dominant throughout. They have been dominant in spurts, but 13 draws While you say, hey, those are results, we got points. In the playoffs, those are opportunities to go down, and that's where they're going to be measured, I think, as we continue on here.
So I don't disagree with you, although I'm about to disagree with you.
Go ahead.
Okay.
The floor I always hear higher. That I don't disagree, but yeah. I know what's coming on the back end.
Exactly.
The floor is higher there. You say that draws are chances to go down. I see that when Atlanta's bad, they lose, and they get killed by Philly. No, killed's the wrong word. They get crushed by Philly. When Nashville's bad, they still draw. And that's where I'm just going back to 2 weeks ago when you asked us, who do you trust the most? And me and Kalen said Nashville. Listen, they are what? 15, 16, 20 points off the Revs? We're not 19. Talking about 19. We're not points. Talking about a team that is a shoe-in to make it to MLS Cup or make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. But we are talking about a team that is clearly better than the rest right now.
Correct.
And Agreed. Is a safer bet in the postseason. And even last night doesn't totally change that for me. And you saw the despondent look on that team when that game ended and Orlando's pushing for the third goal and they showed Leal and Mukhtar on the bench just shell-shocked by what they'd seen. You could tell that there's better expectations there, but it's still I still think this is a team that I feel like I know what I'm going to get in most games.
I agree. Nashville is the second-best team in the Eastern Conference, period. I just think that there are a few little flags, and I know Nashville fans say, look, we have only lost three times. The Revs have more losses than we do. But, you know, come playoff time, it's not about that. You got to finish the job. So that's something that Nashville got to figure out the rest of the way. And by the way, I think it is 5 road games and 2 home games. So there is no guarantee that they're going to hold on to this lofty position, though if you look down the rest of the Eastern Conference, boy, everybody else is trying to lose it. New York City losers to Chicago Fire. Philadelphia draw against the Red Bulls in New York. That's a worse result for the Red Bulls than it is for Philly. They got 7 points out of 9. Jim Curtin's got to be fine with that. Atlanta winners, so they pulled up above the line. Orlando draw, they held above the line. Of course, Montreal lost at home to New England, so they dropped below on 37 points. But from 3 to 8, 3 points separate all those teams.
Montreal
most of
hosts,
them
host Atlanta this week, right?
Yeah. Yeah, most of them have played 27 games. Philly have played 26, which is another reason to maybe believe a little bit in Philly, though that game this weekend is going to be a big one against the Crew. DC fans are sure. They are absolutely certain that we're not going to talk a single minute about them. So let's give them a couple here. I want to give them props for the win against Minnesota, but I also just want to just throw it out to them that they're it's not a caveat, it's not an asterisk, but the best player who could have played in that game didn't play. And Emmanuel Reynoso. And Minnesota are going cross-country for a midweek non-conference game, which you would have to think that they're not going to prioritize as much because they're not able to take points away from a rival in the standings. So that's that. But I also want to give Hernan Losada props. He might be on the brink of pushing into the Coach of the Year argument. I think Robin Fraser is above him, and then you have Schmetzer and obviously Bruce. But anybody have any strong thoughts on this year for D.C.? On Ola Kamara's season, a lot of PKs. Just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, but it's been exactly what they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
It's been a rebirth. It's been
what
a
refresher.
There was a ton of talent in this roster. How did it all fit together? And you've seen Hernan Losada find that. Even when they brought in Julian Gressel, it was like, well, I love Julian Gressel as a player, but you have Paul Arriola. How does he fit into this team? And he's been able to get all those guys into the group. And so it's been huge. And then that's with all the injuries. Steve Birnbaum's now finally back. And we haven't seen him.
Arriola back.
Yeah, we haven't seen Birnbaum play the way maybe we've seen him at his peak, but he's still a steadying force along that back line. What he's gotten out of Andy Nahar, incredible. Get Ola Kamara's confidence back as well. Edson Flores is starting to play like the player he should. And while there's not the final product, 100% did have an assist in this game, that's on the right track for the investment you already put in. So this is, no matter what happens in this playoff run, this is a positive year for DC United. This is a victory. This is what they wanted when they brought this group in. Hernan Losada and now Lucy Rushton coming in as well, sort of changing a lot of, on the soccer side. And they've accomplished everything they've accomplished. One little side note. FC Cincinnati is going to go out and try and get a DP number 6, probably. If they don't...
In a DP coach.
Yeah, if they don't, they and anyone else who really needs one should go to DC United because DC United has 3. Because Felipe and Russell Canales got the start yesterday. They were phenomenal. Canales finally playing the position healthy that he should play is a borderline national team player. And Felipe's been awesome for them. again, every year he keeps coming back. And so anyone who needs a D-mid, if you don't find one outside of this league that you're looking for, you should be talking to DC about a trade.
Let's talk Galaxy ahead of El Tráfico this weekend. Oh, boy. I want to say what I had the form in my column last night. They are the least informed team in MLS. They now have 5 losses and 3 draws in their last 8, and the last 3 have been big fat L's. That's to Minnesota, Austin, and then to Real Salt Lake. Shout out to Anderson Julio, man. That is one of the best game-winning goals I've ever seen in my life. The sombrero over the top and then volley off of it.
I have to agree. It was impressive.
Unbelievable. What a moment for RSL. By the way, these sniffles brought to you by Ragweed Season. Are the who you more?
No, it's your Galaxy Shrine. You're crying over your Galaxy Shrine.
I'm not. Yeah, with the sniffles. Yeah. Chicharito scored, so that, you know, that helps dry my tears a little bit.
And it was a good one.
Yeah, it was a good one. But the difference, guys, it's a roller coaster. It feels like for the Galaxy this year. The beginning of the season, they were down. Like last year was so bad. And it didn't look like Chicharito was going to be healthy. And if he was he going to be this Chicharito that we saw then in the first couple months of the season? And then they're up, and Greg Vanney's a genius, and they're making changes, and they're bringing in all these reinforcements. And, oh, my God, the Galaxy are back. They're going to have a home game. They're third in the West. Chicharito gets hurt. They start going down a little bit. It's not as good as it was before. And now they're just cratering. How does this end for the Galaxy, Chuck? Like, are they going to be able to turn this around? Chicharito's at the, you know, at the podium giving us basically preseason interviews where he's like, you know, this team just needs a result. We just need one result. We believe. If we get that result, maybe we're on. And it just feels like the magic is gone a little bit.
I think they turn it around this weekend. I think they beat LAFC. With that, then they play home against Portland, and Portland's in form, but they're home. And then they play the Dynamo, and they play FC Dallas at home. I think this schedule favors them in the sense of they can get going again before they play at Sporting Kansas City, at Seattle, and then home to Minnesota. Those last 3 games, you can't go into those needing to win, because clearly Sporting Kansas City and Seattle Sounders are better teams than LA Galaxy right now, clearly. So if they can get it going this weekend, and that will jumpstart, you know, they have a nice break after this game against LAFC to try and get healthy for that Portland match. Get everybody on the same page. Then you get the Dynamo away. That's a very winnable game for this Galaxy side. And then home to FC Dallas. That's their season right there. Those 4 games, it's either they can get back into a rhythm and in form, or they're toast.
Feels to me like they're a sacrificial lamb in the first round of the playoffs on the road.
Yeah, I think so too. I think this is a team that will make the playoffs. I think, Greg Vanney's so detailed that in a playoff matchup, you wouldn't totally pick against him even if they're underdogs, because...
Can he play center back?
And that's the issue with this team. And so I disagree a little bit with the way you described their season, where I actually think the most impressive thing they did was they did keep their head above water when Chicharito got hurt for a while. Then Jonah gets hurt. Jonah goes to Mexican national team camps. And that's where I think it started to fall apart for them. They're losing Leggett here and there for games. They haven't brought in Jovalich yet. I think that's where things started to get off the rails for them. But all of it was because the reality was they were putting a piece of paper over this giant hole that was their back line and saying, don't look here, look over there. And so eventually it was going to come falling in. If they can make the postseason a successful year one for Greg Vanney and his staff, and I think that this is a group that's been able to show they can get results out of whatever they have, water out of a rock often enough, that they can get over that line and the Galaxy will make the postseason. And then I agree with you. I think you're looking at probably a first-round loss.
L.A. hosting LAFC on Sunday, ESPN, ESPN Deportes at 8 p.m. Eastern. El Tráfico at Dignity Health Sports Park. These are the sort of games that can jumpstart seasons. I mean, we've talked about that with the crew here. Are LAFC dead in the water?
Yes.
They lose to the Timbers.
Yes.
Still no Carlos Vela. I put out a, I mean, I would say yes too. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But this is just like the greatest hits for Bob Bradley at the dais. He's like, I don't know. Like, he's had to go to because they create so many chances.
I was going to say, not only is this literally like every other LAFC game, this was a carbon copy of the Portland Timbers LAFC game that they played, what, 2 weeks ago? And they come into that one, and you're like, well, they're creating chances, so maybe if they start falling 2 weeks later, if that's not the case, at this point, with the way the season's congested and the way the standings are congested, that's not going to change. And so it's done. Your only
the vibes are off, too.
Your only experienced player on the back line is Jesus Murillo, and, you know, if that doesn't work.
And let's not also forget, Carlos Vela, he's been out. Even if he does come back,
right, he's not.
He's nowhere near match fit. He's nowhere near in form. So it's going to have to take him time to get going, and by that time, the season's going to be over.
Sorry, I had to mute my mic here. Man, allergies. In September, it's absurd. I put out a poll on my Twitter feed because I was thinking about this last night. You guys give me your answer. In 2022, both Bob Bradley and Carlos Vela will be back with LAFC. Neither Bob Bradley or Carlos Vela will be with LAFC. Only Bob will be there or only Carlos will be there. What would you put your vote behind?
I think the safest money is that Vela will be there.
Really?
Yeah.
While there are rumors flying around right now about maybe Liga MX.
Yeah.
While it doesn't seem like he's particularly happy, he's certainly not playing.
Yeah.
Really? My personal one, if I had to choose one, most likely would be either Bob's there or neither are there.
Yeah, so I'm going the opposite. I think Vela's there or... Actually, sorry, I think Vela's there or both are there. Those are my top two.
Okay. Somebody mowing your yard, Charlie?
Yes.
That's what I thought. I was like, somebody's getting a nice trim bag here.
They didn't get the podcast schedule
over there in
Wayman.
Hey, get out! Hey, go mow the back. Go mow. You're right outside my window. I'm trying to record here.
So just real quick on Vela.
Yeah,
I understand he's unhappy. So one, I think is, I don't know anything about this, but Bob Bradley's a tough guy to work with. A lot of people there have worked with him for a while. So if Bob leaves, I think that changes the calculus of whether or not he's coming back. The other thing is, he's unhappy, and he's what? Going to go to Liga MX? A guy who has turned down the Mexican national team for 6 years is going to go to a league where every stadium he walks into, he's going to be booed from the first minute he walks on the field to the last, and he's going to leave LA. That I find hard to believe, and I think once the season ends and he starts to look at his options and whoever he talks to in Europe and whoever he talks to in Mexico, I think that's where he potentially comes back around and everyone says, hey, man, we love you here.
Yep.
You're the face of this franchise. And I think the ownership group would be happy to have him back.
At what price, though?
I think that's where you meet halfway, where it's Vela decides, yeah, actually, maybe this is where I want to be. And the ownership group says, this was the number we were pushing you at. But to keep you because of your stature, even if maybe you're not at that level anymore, we can meet you halfway from what you want to what we want. And listen, it's not my money, so I don't get to decide. But the reality of this league is at a DP level, it doesn't affect the competitiveness of your team, whatever number you choose to pay him at that
point. Well, if he doesn't play,
he's a DP in MLS.
I know he is. I know he is. But his health has got to give you some issues, some question marks. Like, you don't get value out of him if he doesn't play.
There's a team that has Ignacio Aliceta on a DP contract.
You want to talk about them real quick?
Hey, yeah. don't bury them right now.
Oh, boy. All right, let's talk about them because Dave's going to have to hit the airport here in just a second. Look, El Tráfico coming up this weekend, a bunch of big games as well. MLSsoccer.com is your spot for all the coverage. Other national TV games, Portland hosting Inter Miami on FS1 on Sunday. Portland, of course, beat LAFC. There was a little nervous, like heart-dropping moment in that one because Sebastian Blanco looked like he might have been hurt, but afterwards Gio Savarese said, hey, look, precautionary. We don't think it's anything serious. That's good to hear. Kansas City-Houston. On Sunday, that is the Kalen Carr former rivalry. 4 p.m. Eastern, Unimas Tudian, Twitter. That one's free to watch on Twitter as well. Daniel Shalloway with two more goals. They knocked off FC Dallas. Ricardo Pepi did get one there. We'll talk more about Shalloway, I'm sure, in the coming weeks because his goals from open play numbers are absolutely ridiculous right now. And then the other national TV game this weekend is Saturday, Austin, Real Salt Lake. Shout out again to Anderson Julio for that goal. If you have not seen it, go watch it. RSL currently in the Western Conference, fifth, 39 points, 5 points clear of Vancouver. LA and Salt Lake and basically everybody above the line got some favors because San Jose lost, LAFC lost, and Vancouver drew against Houston.
And it was midweek. A bad performance from Vancouver, by the way. A little frustrating with them, but we'll see.
Okay. Oh, by the way, congrats to the Colorado Rapids for winning a game. They've dropped, by my count, at least 8 points in the last month. They should be top of the Western Conference.
From winning positions.
From winning positions, correct. They've been up, they've allowed goals, mm-hmm. and they have lost those points. It's pretty incredible to say that the Colorado Rapids should be in first in the West, but I don't think that's really out of pocket. They are at 48 points, just a point back of Sporting Kansas City. They have a game in hand on Sporting, but Seattle has two games in hand on Sporting and one on the Rapids.
I'm curious to know, where is Robin Fraser in Coach of the Year candidate?
He's a finalist for me. He's one of the three. Yeah, it's for me and look, Kansas City people and Peter Vermees can be like, what do we have to do? Because they've had serious injuries and international absences this year. But for me, it's Schmetzer. It is
Bruce.
It is Robin. And then it's Bruce is like the assumed foregone conclusion winner.
And who's fourth for you?
If Peter's fourth, Nonsay's fifth then.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough.
And
the
Gary
outside
Smith
that next
as well.
Yeah, that next group is really strong because you're right. It's Nonsay, it's Peter, it's Gary Smith, and I think you would have to put in Hernan Losada into that group as well.
Yeah, so. I agree.
All right, let's talk Fire. Taylor Twellman reported late after Rafael Wicky's Fire won 2-0 at home against NYCFC that Wicky was out. The Athletic is now confirming that. I believe the Fire have this morning confirmed that. Yeah, that's where I got the quote-unquote parted ways from. Ever creative in their ways of saying fired. 12-25-4 in the MLS regular season was Rafael Wicky. He almost made the playoffs last year, which is a little bit of a misnomer because I think 10 teams made the playoffs. So, I mean, he almost made the playoffs, but, you know, in a normal year, not even close. And this year, they're not even close. 12th in the East, 12 points off the playoff line. Yeah, it's two carbon copies, basically, the two seasons. Not good. Not good enough. George Heitz hired him. They were boys from Basel, I believe. And Barrich, Alisson, and Jimenez are still their DPs, and I would say that none of them have played at a DP level. I'm not sure that anybody on this team has been a game changer in any positive way. It's been a comedy of errors at times over the last 2 years. I mean, we've talked repeatedly in the show, like the Fire have just figured out ways to shoot themselves in the foot over and over and over and over. And while that's not Rafael Wicky's fault, necessarily, his player is the one making those plays. He is the one setting things up and putting the team out there.
Right.
So who's going to take responsibility in this business? It's going to be Rafael Wicky, and that's what's happened.
Do you remember?
He is not the problem, I don't think. I mean, we can get into more here. He's not the problem. Look, they haven't made the playoffs in like 10 of 12 seasons.
Right.
Like, the problem is the rot is much deeper than Rafael Wicky, but he was always going to be this first domino to fall, and so he has fallen.
Do you guys both remember when they were floating rumors that Robert Lewandowski was going to sign for them? We're talking about Robert Barrich. I mean,
I need that.
I think the moving to Soldier Field for Chicago Fire, you would expect, man, we're going to be dominant at home, and we want to have an entertaining team with stars. That's what you want to show off being in Chicago. It's an incredible city, and they've done everything but that. I just don't understand the idea behind some of their signings and how they've built this team. And when you look at how they've built this team, that does fall on the GM and Rafa Wicky. So from that standpoint, I think they made the right decision in going a different way. And now you have to assess before the season even ends, what direction are you going in Chicago Fire? Who are you going to be? Are you going to be an Eastern Conference powerhouse? Are you going to go out and sign a big name, a star? Is it going to be someone like Cuauhtémoc Blanco who could bring the city together, and there's a large population of Mexican fans in Chicago? Is that a direction you go and try and find someone? You know, maybe you make a play on Carlos Vela if that was an opportunity. So I think it's going to be an interesting offseason for the Chicago Fire to figure out who are they? What's their new DNA? You rebrand, yet the team is still nowhere near, I think, a quality team. It's just you play a Chicago Fire, you expect a subpar performance. So I think they have to do a lot of thinking and evaluating, just like FC Cincinnati.
So I agree with you, and the similarities between that and FC Cincinnati. One of the things that's frustrating, and I think this is a conversation that's coming up a lot now because you have a lot of coaching openings and a few GM ones as well, is MLS experience versus non-MLS experience. And you look at the way these two teams chose to build themselves, and then you look at the goals they give up, the way they lose, and it's, you know, it's silly mistakes. It's a lack of experience in how to win in this league. And talk all you want about Berridge versus Lewandowski and Vela and all that. Look at the back line. Look at Gaston Jimenez being the base of your midfield in a league there. Every good team has a elite, borderline best 11 D mid. And so I think when I think of understanding how to win in this league, respecting how to win in this league also. And then both these clubs, they realized 2 months in, uh-oh. But then who's available? Jonathan Borenstein at this age. Francisco Calvo. In Cincinnati's situation, it was Kendall Waston, and they go out and try and get Jeff Cameron and whatever. Like, those two clubs, the way they've operated, it has really mirrored itself. And a lot of it, I think, was lack of understanding and respect for how hard this league is and what makes this league hard. And then I still think when Wiebe mentioned, you know, how much is it his fault and all that, at some point you have to put 10 behind the ball and say we are incapable of attacking consistently and not losing games. And they never did that, and they were never able to find a way to make it work enough. Now, they only were 1 point out of the playoffs last year. It was an expanded playoffs. It was a weird year, and then they lost that playoff decision day game in the exact way they had lost all season. So it showed a lack of understanding of what was going wrong. But that's here or there. And I've said, I mean, we joked about it or talked about it a lot on the last show, right? I talked about international players giving them a year. They brought in 14 players to start last year, the bulk of which were foreign players or players who had never played in this league before. And so they were a team that needed a year plus to settle. And I think what's even more frustrating than Wiki's performances is, did you not have a conversation about how long this would take? And if you were going to bring 14 new players in and move stadiums and rebrand and all this stuff, did you not have a roadmap? And if you did, then and Wiki didn't hit it, fine. But if you thought it was going to work quickly, you were wrong. And if you didn't say, hey, we're going to be bad a little bit, but in 3 years, we're going to be where we want to be, then that's even worse.
I think you're spot on, Gosson. They had MLS experience. They had that in their assistant coaches. They were loaded. And Rafa Vicky has played in MLS. Yeah. I mean, it was obviously MLS, like, what, 1.0, 1.5?
I think he played like 8 times because he was always hurt.
Yeah, but at least he knew how the league operated. He had seen and he knew what to expect. However, it just hadn't gone well. It just really hadn't. And they need a reboot. They need a complete rebrand of the squad.
All right, had to let Dave go to the airport. He is on his way back to New York City, I guess, as we speak, or in an Uber, whatever it may be. One point I want to make on the Fire as I was listening to you guys there. The reason why Wiki is gone is because there was no improvement from 2020. Yeah, they almost made the playoffs. They had all these positive signs. It felt like they were on the brink of something. That's why I was sitting on this show being like the Fire on my team this year. You know, a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I'm going to take shots of Malork, et cetera, et cetera. Was that there was, it seemed, a foundation to jump off a little bit. But they are last in the Eastern Conference in goals scored. So it's not just calamity at the back that's the issue here. They're not consistently creating chances. They're not consistently competing outside of this game that they just won against New York City, which is like the, you know, that's a canary in the coal mine a little bit. It wasn't going in the right direction. At some point, things have to change. And Joe Mansueto, the owner of the Chicago Fire, is clearly very ambitious. I am curious to see what else changes, because when you have two seasons like this, when you have a decade plus like this, change comes. I mean, there is an entire generation. There are probably more MLS fans out there that don't remember the Chicago Fire ever being good than there are who remember the Fire being a powerhouse in the early days and the middle days of the league. That's how bad it's been. So you're right, Charlie. There's a foundational change that needs to happen. There's a cultural change that needs to happen. The new identity is a good start. Listening to their fans when it came to the identity is a good start. But there's some big question marks. Who's going to lead this team on the coaching side? Can they construct a roster for that coach that can win? Can they rebuild trust with their fan base? Where are they going to play soccer games? There are many open questions with the Chicago Fire, and I want to see them answer them all. I want to see them return to the heights of Cuauhtémoc Blanco and before that Bob Bradley and the championship-winning teams that they had. We need that as a league. You know, I want to see every single one of our teams be competent and more. You know, I want to see them have a soccer project that is admirable. I want to see them connect with their community and have people care deeply about their team and the results and everything that goes on within the organization. But they got some big, big work to do because right now this ain't it. And this decision is a direct reflection of that. And so I think change is coming, certainly on the roster side. They had a lot of contracts coming up. They signed two-year deals with a bunch of guys before 2020. Well, it's time to figure out how they can reset, and they need a hard reset badly. All right, let's get to the U.S. men's national team, the roster. We'll get the mailbag. We'll get out of here. Charlie, what do you think? 27 guys called in by Greg Berhalter. No Gio Reyna, no Christian Pulisic. Those are injury issues. They could come in, says Greg Berhalter, and maybe could be called in mid-camp. So it's a big TBD on that one. Two home games for the U.S. In this go-round instead of two away games. You have two home, one away. It starts on Thursday, Jamaica in the U.S. And then you're going to travel to Panama. Always a classic there. And then you're going to host Costa Rica in Columbus to finish it out. Any surprises for you on this roster, or did it all make sense? I mean, we could go through the whole thing, but by now people have seen it. They've listened to Scuff. They've listened to Total Soccer Show. They've got it pretty well figured out. You do have Weston McKennie back. No surprise there. Greg Berhalter saying, like, he's fully back. We handled our business. We've talked to Weston. It's all good. All guys dropped here that you thought might be here. Josh Sargent dropped. Walker Zimmerman not there. James Sands not in this team. P-Folk not in this team. Conrad also not in this team. You have UK-based players, and Tim Ream, Zach Steffen, and Antti Robinson as well are not going to travel to Panama, given its status as a red list country, quote-unquote, and the 10-day quarantine that's required upon the return. ESPN's Jeff Carlisle, reporting that one. Gianluca Busio is in for World Cup qualifying. That's new. But I think the one that you're probably most excited for, Musa.
I am.
Yunus Musa, into the team.
I couldn't be more excited for Yunus Musa because I was really hyped for him for Nations League final, for the semifinal and the final. He didn't play the role that I had hoped and expected him to play. Goes home and then back to Valencia. You would think, okay, when is that time coming from? He was injured. Now he's fully fit. He's playing in La Liga. This is a
he got his first start in the last week.
You talk about this midfield with the U.S. men's national team. Tyler Adams, we know he's a lock. He is. You can pencil him in. As long as he is healthy, you're penciling him in the starting lineup just because of what he brings to the team and his quality. And he hasn't played consistently because of injuries. So you have to rest him every now and then. But I'm always going to pencil him in. Weston McKennie, this is like, redemption.
Redemption time,
redemption.
Baby.
I'm hyped for that. I want to see a rebirth in a sense of, now that he's, you know, made that, I think, era of judgment with this U.S. men's national team, taking that with him and allowing himself to mature and grow in so many other ways that adds to his level of performance with the U.S. men's national team. So I'm really psyched for that. That's number two. Three, you were thinking of Kellen Acosta. And then Sebastian Lletget comes in the second half against Honduras on the road, has a performance. Now you add Yunus Musa to the equation. That's your game changer in the midfield because of his ability to break through the lines on the dribble, acceleration. Now he's not a player who's going to score a ton of goals, but you don't need him to. You need him to be there to be an outlet, to create chances, to get it to your wingers, whether it's Aronson or Wea or playing into the channels for Ricardo Pepi. That's what you need from that position. And I think you have so many players who can fit the bill. Christian Roldan looked good coming in with the second half against Honduras, but also with the Seattle Sounders, you know what you're going to get from him. Sebastian Legette, Kellen Acosta, and now Yunus Musah. So I'm really pleased with Yunus Musah coming in. And it also allows this team to continue to grow without Christian Pulisic on the field. He came off against Honduras, and it was almost as if, okay, guys, we don't have to play it to Christian every time. We can move it around and mix it up. There wasn't this pressure of having to always look for him. So when you get that going and then you throw Christian back into the lineup, there's that sense of, okay, we don't have to always look for him. He doesn't always have to be the number one target, and he doesn't feel like he has to be the guy every time and get on the ball every single time to create a chance. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this group and Gio Reyna, obviously both of them still recovering, Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic, but they still have the quality and they know they have the quality to get it done. And you touched on it. Gianluca Busio, he's playing in Serie A. And he's playing well. Exactly.
Playing well. Venezia, they're going to be up against it all season long, but he has not looked intimidated. He has had moments where he has been, on the wrong end of a physical confrontation, no doubt. We know that's going to be the case, but he's been composed. His set-piece service has been incredible. We know he has that in the bag. And on the ball, he can see things and do things, I think, sort of from a deep-lying position that we don't necessarily have in this group. So I like that one coming in. I also like Chris Richards. That's actually what I'm most excited for, because we saw in the last camp that John Brooks is not necessarily the rock that sometimes we expect and build him up to be, and that's okay. Like, there needs to be more guys in that group that are pushing to be the leader of it, and I think Chris Richards, based on his performances, could be. And you're now seeing rumors that Bayern had to reject, like, £20 million offers from the Premier League this offseason and to send him to Hoffenheim because they wanted to hold on to him longer, even if there's not a place immediately in their 11.
Oh,
that
yeah.
bodes so well for the U.S. national team. I mean, I want to see him finally sort of get his run out with the first team in these high-pressure games. I am a little bit disappointed not to see Joe Scally in this team just because I think his level of performance recently in the Bundesliga has been really encouraging. And his versatility would solve some of the issues that we seem to see in the last camp when it came to rotation and sort of minute load with the outside backs, because like Dest, he can play both sides. I also think he has a game that fits CONCACAF, just in like his willingness to just physically get after it and his capability to do that. So I wanted to see him, but I understand why he's not there. But I would have thought, hey, get him in as early as possible, given his trajectory, so that you can lean on him more as this World Cup qualifying campaign rolls on. I'm not worried about the striker position. Matthew Hoppe's here. He could play winger, but he can play striker too, and that's really where he's been playing, from Mallorca. And that seems like a pretty good move for him so far. I'm excited to see Tim Weah. You know, it's been so stop-start for him for so long. I just hope that at some point he has a platform to start building from again and like a consistency in terms of his ability to play soccer for long periods of time. This is a big opportunity, this window, to sort of build on that Honduras game, to turn the page, to move up the standings in the octagon, and to do so maybe without two of the best attacking players, if not the two best players in our player pool, in Reyna and Pulisic. And I liked it, Pulisic, your idea of, hey, we don't have to be so reliant. Like, when he's here, make him part of the group as opposed to sort of like this focal point that we always feel like we have to push the ball through. Because that's where he gets a little over dribbly, I think. That's where he feels that pressure. And that's where the U.S. get a little disjointed in the way they're attempting to create chances, because it becomes Christian Pulisic against the world. And I think he's so much better when you can find him in those pockets of space where it's not him versus four defenders, though he can beat four. It's him running at one guy who's just like, oh, crap, I'm on an island. And when you're on that island, Christian's going to beat you, and then we have a lot of guys who are really good at making those late runs into the box. What's the 11 that you would like to see against Jamaica? Like, and maybe not just against Jamaica, because I don't want you to have to take tactical considerations necessarily into it, but just sort of the 11 that you would build in your mind here in these early days as we look through. I think we both would say yes. Matt Turner in goal, right? So we'd start with Matt Turner. Then what? On the back line? How about center back?
Miles Robinson. He is my number one center back. When I'm penciling in who's starting first right now, it's Miles Robinson. He's in form. He's fit. Now he's proven on the international stage. I think he had some really solid performances. And then alongside him, I would play Chris Richards. That would be my choice. That's who I'd like to see. But I think John Brooks will probably get the start still, being in that first game. And then Anthony Robinson on the left, because of his second half against Honduras, I thought, okay, you know what you're going to get from Anthony Robinson, up and down. He's consistent. And I think now he's not, typically you see him play at Fulham, you know what you get. And then he'd have a drop off with the U.S. men's national team. I think now he's caught up to the speed and he understands how to play to his strengths within this group. And then on the right, that's the difficult part. Because we have all seen the Des mixtape, right? It works when you're playing for Barcelona against smaller teams and they're just defending and you can take time on the ball and dance, but not in CONCACAF. That's not how it works. Yedlin, you know what you're going to get from him. I like seeing Yedlin on the pitch. I would start Yedlin, but I think Dest is going to start this game.
Yeah, I think you're right about that one. And I would start Dest against Jamaica in particular, who I think are going to be more of like a counterattacking look on the road to the U.S. I think, you know, having that guy that can get forward is pretty valuable. The question then is, on that counterattack, are Robinson and Dest going to be in positions to recover? That's maybe why you play a Richards next to Miles Robinson, because you think they have the legs. You know, Scuffed has coined the USS Brooks for John Brooks because he moves like a warship sometimes. You know, maybe that's the time to start getting the form and the ability of Chris Richards into the team. We shall see what Greg wants to do. How about this midfield? One surprise, though, is Luca De La Torre. I think that's probably the biggest, like, new face surprise in this group. You start with Tyler Adams if he's available, period. That's just where it all starts. And from there, where do you go? Weston's in, I would think. So you have two. So who is sort of Musa, the partner with them? Who's more Musa of a box-to-box?
I think
Musa? Even though he hasn't been playing 90s?
I think it's Musa. Although you could say Gianluca Busio then. But against Jamaica, I would go with Musa. You need someone who has a little bit more strength to them and bite. And I think Musa has a little bit more bite, strength, acceleration, and he's better on the dribble than Busio, Luca De La Torre. You need someone who has also a physical presence and good on the ball. And I think against the Jamaican side, that's who I would play.
Ricardo Pepi starts.
Yes,
we can all agree that
it's not a question.
It's got to be the case. Who are your wingers then?
Aaronson. He's playing.
Yep.
He's done the
obvious one.
I would pick Tim Weah just because he's playing. He was man of the match against Strasbourg in Liga on September 25th. He's started in Champions League. He's playing. He's fit and he looks good. Against that, in that friendly against Costa Rica post Nations League final, you got to see, I think American fans finally got to see a glimpse of what he can do on the attacking side of the ball. But he tracks back. He can defend. He's got great work rate and good runs. He's a creative player. Just hasn't had, I think, the confidence yet to do that with the U.S. men's national team. I'd like to see him there. But in saying that, I think Greg Berhalter goes with a more pragmatic approach. We've seen him use Paul Areola in most cases within this type of situation, in this format, where he gets up and down, very, you know, he's a very straight north-south kind of guy. You know exactly what you're going to get from him. Hard work, you know, hardworking player, work rate, industrial. But that's kind of it. That's his game. And love it or hate it, that's him. And Greg Berhalter tends to usually go with Paul Areola in this instance.
Feels to me like the U.S. is going to press a lot. Being at home for two of these games, being on the front foot, being against teams that, you know, are not the Mexicos of the world. I think based on just the wingers, And the group they have in midfield, they can possess, and they'll want to progress it that way, but I think they're also going to try to put teams under pressure. And I think that's where you'll see the wingers come in, and maybe even a Matthew Hoppe on the wing coming in, because you have either, depending on who plays left back, a Dest or an Anthony Robinson, a guy who can provide width, whereas Hoppe then makes more sense to push inside a little bit and join up with Pepe and give him a little
bit. Who do you think starts right
wing? We shall see. I mean, I think it'll be Aronson, and then I would personally... I don't know. Aronson can play both sides, so I think Aronson starts, period, and then it's a question of preference. You know, Areola is going to make sense if you want to press, and that's going to be your game. He is a guy who gets a lot of chances and creates a lot of chances. Sometimes it is a question of final product, but he causes chaos in a good way. And I think Matthew Hoppe is sort of the same, but more goal dangerous. So we shall see. I want to see Tim Weah take this step, but we've been wanting to see that for a while, and he just hadn't found the consistency. Mm-hmm. Maybe now is the time. That's a decision for Greg to make, and he will make it. Well, they're going to do extra time club and country during my Continental Tire before and after every game. We'll have the spaces before every U.S. game, and then we'll do the post-game show just like we did for Leagues Cup, Campeones Cup, and all the games in the previous qualifiers afterward as well. It'll be me, you, Dave, and Doyle, I believe, and maybe Kalen filling in at times. We'll let people know what that lineup is going to be. But we're your spot after U.S. national team games. Come hang out. We're just gonna react the way we always do and try to make sense of what we saw on the field. I would jump us into the mailbag, but we're out of time here. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Plus, I don't know if Andres hit that mute button or not. I've been having straight-up sneezing fits in the background of all of this. Ragweed, I hate you. I need to go get some medicine here to help alleviate that. But big thanks, everybody, for listening, following along. We'll be back on Monday to break everything down. Remember, MLSsoccer.com, your spot for all the coverage. The playoff races are heating up. Bunch of national TV games this weekend, whether they're on Unimas, TUDN, and Twitter in English. You've got one on Saturday. You've got one on Sunday. We've also got ESPN and FS1 games, and El Tráfico is going down on ESPN this weekend. So another big weekend MLS. We'll be back to break it down on Monday. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll be right back.